Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Teich. As we mark the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, we've heard a lot about the battles, the heroes, the death tolls. But what we don't often hear enough is about the people who had the biggest stake in the war's outcome. African Americans, both slaves and free persons as well. University of Wisconsin historian Steve Kantrowitz argues we often overlook the role of Northern free blacks in advocating against slavery and pushing the issue to the front of the national conscience. He'll give a lecture on the topic tomorrow as part of Beloit College's History of the Civil War lecture series. Kantrowitz says only about 250,000 free blacks lived in the North before the war, a small number compared with the country's almost 4 million slaves. But he tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce the small group had a disproportionate impact.
That's a very significant population, both in the role that they play in the imagination of white Northerners, and maybe more important, in the role they play in bringing the Civil War and in changing what it means.
You say in bringing the Civil War. Expand on that.
Well, let's think about the reasons that the Confederates give for their secession. When South Carolina secedes in December of 1860, they issue this document called a Declaration of Immediate Causes, the reasons that justify, in other words, our leaving the Union. And what do they say is the reason that they have to leave the Union? They say, up in the North, they have given sanction to a movement that says that slavery is not morally legitimate. They have allowed associations that make that case to flourish. They have given shelter to our fugitive slaves, and they've prevented the prosecution of people for sheltering fugitive slaves and prevented their return. And they have passed laws that say we can't get our fugitive slaves back anymore. Every single one of those things, the anti-slavery movement itself, the movement to shelter fugitives, the movement to pass laws to protect fugitives from return to slavery, all those things are spearheaded by free black activists in the North. And only after they've been taken up as causes by African Americans in the North, only after that taken up as causes by white people as well. So in some ways, the black activists of the North are really the tip of the spear of the movement against slavery and for the freedom for fugitives that causes Southern secessionists to feel like they have no other recourse but to leave the Union.
Tell us more about that relationship between free blacks in the North and white Northerners.
It's a very vexed relationship. Free blacks are free, but they're not equal. Even in the place where they're the closest to formally equal in the entire pre-Civil War North, and that is to say Massachusetts, they can't serve in the state militia. They don't serve on juries. Black men can vote, but it's very rare that a political party will openly campaign for their votes. And in fact, what's much more common is for the idea of black people's freedom to be represented as a kind of an emblem of everything that's wrong with freedom. That is, free black people don't know how to behave properly, they put on airs, they try to get above their station. There's a whole discourse among white Northerners that says that free black people are pretty much ridiculous. And the best example of this is that the most popular piece of popular culture in the entire pre-Civil War North is blackface minstrelsy, which is really, at least, you know, superficially, devoted to the idea that black people are comical, not citizens, not equals, but sort of comical figures who don't know how to behave properly, either as slaves or as free people. But that broad sense of black inferiority and difference is constantly challenged by black people who assert their dignity, their Americanness, their rights, and who claim the Declaration of Independence and the American Revolution as part of their birthright and part of their entitlement. And by the 1820s, they're sufficiently well-organized and sufficiently vocal that they're able to recruit just a handful of white people to their side. And these people are the people that we now call the abolitionists, white anti-slavery people who join with black people in firmly opposing slavery and calling for its immediate end, not just its containment or something like that. And those white abolitionists become the core of, then with the black activists, the core of that interracial social movement that we call abolition, that is the sort of radical far end of anti-slavery that ends up becoming really the dominant political force in the North by 1860.
Do the free black activists get the credit today that they deserved in really being the impetus for this movement? prior to the Civil War?
They don't. We know two things, right? Everybody knows that Frederick Douglass was important. And nobody, or almost nobody who's not a historian, knows much about anybody else who played an important role or what their important role was. And the reason I wrote the book was to try to get inside the social and intellectual and political world of black activists who were imagining what freedom and equal dignity would look like, who were trying to make it into a reality, who were cultivating relationships among themselves and with white allies, and who were trying to turn the Civil War and turn American citizenship into things that they could use, things that would work for them. But I don't think that we know this story nearly well enough, and we don't know this cast of characters nearly well enough. And I think if we did understand them, we'd have to think really differently, both about the Civil War and about how American citizenship has evolved over time.
What do you mean in the sense of we would need to think about the Civil War differently?
Well, we think of the Civil War as a struggle over nationhood and a struggle over slavery. But it's also a struggle over equality. We now, in the aftermath of the Civil Rights Movement, have freedom and equality kind of joined at the hip in our imaginations. We imagine that once a people are free, they are also, by virtue of that freedom, equal citizens. But almost nobody in 1860 thought that that was going to be the case. Even people who imagined an end to slavery, most of them couldn't imagine that that meant that the people liberated from slavery would therefore become equal citizens. That was a very radical idea. And the only reason that it even vaguely entered the Constitution in the late 1860s, in the 14th and 15th Amendments, was because the victorious North was so eager not to let the defeated Confederates regain all the ground they'd lost at the ballot box. So they had to make sure that black Southerners were enfranchised. But the notion that freedom and equality should go together, that just wasn't on people's radar. And it was free blacks in the North who were the ones insisting on that and the ones from the get-go imagining that freedom must be joined to equality or freedom itself was meaningless.
What was the situation like here in Wisconsin? I mean, in the early 19th century, Wisconsin was still very much a frontier area. But did we have this movement here?
To a limited extent, Wisconsin didn't have a very large African-American population in the antebellum. It, of course, did have some population. And it did have at least the germ of a radical interracial movement against slavery and for the freedom of fugitives. The most famous case is the Joshua Glover case, which probably everybody in the Milwaukee area is familiar with at this point. But Wisconsin is far enough away from the centers of free black population that it doesn't play as central a role in that part of the story as it plays in later freedom struggles and later struggles for dignity.
What happened afterward? Once this great struggle was over, were free blacks' voices heard more than they had been previously, or were they still marginalized?
Free black people's voices emerge very powerfully for a short moment after the Civil War. There's a brief window of time between the late 1860s and the late 1870s when there are a substantial number of African-American people who can be heard nationally, who sit in Congress, who even sit in the Senate, who sit in the governor's office, who can get the ear of official power, who are recognized as a force in national party politics. In other words, who are really an important both symbol of what the war was about and voice for what it should now mean. But in fairly short order, the energy on the white side of that coalition shifts away from the struggle for equality and inclusion and towards other matters. And that has to do with a lot of factors: crippling depression, an upsurge of white supremacist terror, a generally superficial commitment to equality among a lot of Northerners, a broad-based commitment to freedom, but a superficial commitment to equality. And all of these come together to mean that by the late 1870s, equality is no longer really a powerful force driving the conversation. And the black voices and the handful of white voices articulating it are more and more marginal to the political conversation in the United States.
Is there a particular lesson that we here in the Milwaukee area can take from looking anew at these activists and what they did to drive this movement?
I think there are a couple of lessons here. One is how important it is to have a clear sense that equality means dignity, means inclusion. It doesn't simply mean that the language of rights means the same thing for all people. It means that people learn to regard one another as citizens of equal dignity, of equal worth, of equal standing. And I think that's where communities all over the United States have often fallen short. If the free black struggle, you know, against slavery and for equality is going to continue to have meaning in the 21st century, it's going to be because of that important lesson. And the lesson that those people learned was because of their particular location. They lived with freedom, but without equality. And what that taught them was that a really broad, emotionally warm equality was the only thing that would make freedom really feel like equality.
Well, Stephen Kantrowitz, thank you so much for speaking with us.
It's a great pleasure.
Stephen Kantrowitz is a professor of history at UW-Madison and author of the book More Than Freedom, Fighting for Black Citizenship in a White Republic, 1829 to 1889. He'll be giving a lecture on Black Northerners and the Meaning of the Civil War this Wednesday evening as part of Beloit College's History of the Civil War lecture series. There's more about the series and about the next lecture on September 25th at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Kantrowitz spoke with Stephanie Lecce. That's Tuesday's Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, some insight into the testing process for performance-enhancing drugs in sports. Plus, we'll learn how the health of the Great Lakes and national forests are inextricably linked. I'm Mitch Tyne. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.